Okay, how about I tell you a little bit about my weekend as well, because it's important also to anchor everything that we do and say in real life, because we are not talking about disembodied spirits and souls, but we are talking about real people. Yesterday I went to Bristol and met with a few people who are part of a network who are interested in working with Muslims in Bristol. And it was great. It was great for me to just meet a few people that have the same sort of interest, and to be able to use a little bit of my Arabic with an English girl who was there, but who has lived in Egypt for quite a while and in Sudan as well. And when you say these sort of things, you sort of, oh, he speaks Arabic. And I know that that's a word of warning for you. As soon as you speak a few languages, people get wary of you, and it becomes something that, you know, is, in fact, instead of being a means of communication, almost something that is in between. But it was great to hear about what is happening, and it's important to be in a network and to hear about things. And they were telling me about these 11 Iranians who had embraced Christ and who had been baptized last month. And it's great to hear these things that need to be quite quiet, even if this is going to be on the internet and available for everybody, maybe. It's great to know that these things are happening, and that there is understanding. And the difficulty is obviously for them to understand what we are trying to say about our Bible, what is the message that we have, what is different to what they thought it was all about, this business about religion and God. Oh, it means something different. Let's have a look. And it's in the transfer of meaning, it's in the translation that everything happens. Okay. Little bit more about my week this morning. This morning I got up very early. It was 6:30, which is pretty normal. And my two little ones, Maisie and Matthew, were up. And what they did first thing was to go in front of the telly, because Maisie really wanted to watch again something that we started watching together Friday night. And I found that on Netflix. I wasn't even looking for it, but we found something called Joseph, King of Dreams. It's an animation movie, and it is actually very good. So if you've got Netflix or if you can find that, it's quite good. And for Maisie, who is 6, it's very important that she gets to know the story. And for Matthew to have all the songs and just get a little bit of that, because what is important is that we get to know the stories. The Bible is full of stories, and I'm pretty certain that Maisie would not have understood the whole of the story, but she's watched it now 4 or 5 times, because that's the way she learns. Yeah, because she knows that she's missed a few bits, so she's watching it again. That's clever. And do you know what? I think we need to do the same thing. Not watching TV all the time, or your iPad, or whatever, but there's great things that we need to cover again in order to learn. And sometimes, if not very often, if not most of the time, it only makes sense later on. Do you agree with me? Are there many, many passages in the Bible that I never understood it that way, or, oh, I suddenly, it makes sense now? And that's the reality of it. One reading is not enough. Just like for Maisie, just watching the film once, okay, I've done that, is not enough. And I'm pretty certain that tonight she'll want to watch it again, because she's quite obsessional sometimes with what she wants to get through. Okay. I've had a thought in the last 6 months, and you're going to sort of think, Fee, that's a little morbid. But no, it's not. No. Do you know what? We speak the languages of the dead. We speak the languages of the dead. Or we speak the language of the dead. There's nothing morbid there. the English that we are using now has been made by millions of people, and 99% of them, well, maybe 98% of them, are dead today. They created that language that we use. Every language has been created by people that are actually dead. A lot of the words that we use every day have been taken from people that are dead. And if they are alive today, it probably is through language, because we still understand each other. And I think it's important to maybe bear that in mind when we come to the Bible, because the languages that are used are very important. Okay. There's a saying or a little story that Mike Howell just used a few weeks ago, and that made me smile. And it's something that somebody like N.T. Wright has used many, many times. I don't know if it originates from him or somebody else. And it's something that goes along the lines of wherever Paul went, the Apostle Paul, wherever Paul went, there was a riot. And wherever I go, they serve tea and coffee. I'd like to have a riot tonight. Not because I want to be controversial, but because I think it's important to just, well, maybe react profoundly to what we hear. There's no point hearing the gospel, the prophets, if there isn't a reaction. Okay, I've got a title for you, and the title is The Queen Mother of Your Life. Now, when Chris was asking me this morning, okay, what sort of songs do you want, I sort of gave him this title, The Queen Mother of Your Life. And I could feel a little irritation. And then later on I understood that you hadn't had too much sleep last night. So basically, you wanted a plain, simple answer. And you didn't get it first, did you? No. I was quite happy to sort of use this sort of riddle. The Queen Mother of Your Life. It's mysterious. And I would like to hook you with that. You know, the Queen Mother of Your Life. What is he on about? But do you know what? The Queen Mother of your life, that's only really... It only really makes sense, even if it doesn't really make sense yet, it only makes sort of sense in British English. Because Queen Mother means something that all of you just, oh yeah, I know what you mean by that. Move into French, Queen Mother, la Reine Mère. What do you mean? You know, France is a republic. Last time we had a king was 1848. What? It doesn't relate to me. So that title is good for you, not for people in my own country, because it would just be... In German, well, they've had a republic for quite a while. Maybe they would have something about that, because the Queen Mother, that may make some sense in Bavaria, because there was one movement of resistance to Hitler that was trying to get the old... monarchy back in Bavaria and tried to oust Hitler. It didn't quite work, and it may be one of the reasons why Rudolf Hess had been sent to Scotland, and it's very odd to have the number two of the Nazi regime just falling off a parachute into Scotland. There's something not quite right there, is there? Is there? Come on. Right, so the Queen Mother of Your Life, how about in Arabic? Well, maybe from Morocco, where they have a kingdom, but for most Arabs, I think Queen Mother would be something that would refer back to the Arabian Nights or something like that. A bit of you know, something which is totally remote. And okay, where am I going with that? Okay, I'm going to Daniel chapter 5. So, can you please, if you have a Bible around you, make sure that you've got Daniel chapter 5 ready for action. While you're finding the page, Daniel 5. Daniel is for us a prophet. In the Jewish canon, it is not a prophet. It is one of the writings that go at the end of the canon, with a book like Esther, for example. And the two are, I think, very closely connected in many ways. Now, if you're talking about languages, I want you to think for a second to one word, one story that is linked to languages in the Bible. Tower of Babel, okay? Babel, that's another form of the word for Babylon, okay? Tower of Babel, there, you've got a lot of people that are very arrogant, who want to compete with God's power and compete against God's sovereignty. They want to reach the sky themselves. Sky, heaven, same word in Hebrew, Shamayim. And God intervenes in humans' history, okay? And he confuses languages so that their arrogance is kept under control. So languages, in that case, are something which is part of the arrogance of Babylon, of Babel. Something which is part of, okay, well, we need to bring this down a little bit. Okay. Another story in the Bible that has something to do with languages.
Pentecost.
And that is the exact reverse of the Tower of Babel. In that case, you've got all these people gathered in Jerusalem. They speak different languages, and they start understanding each other. They start speaking each other's language. They become intelligible to each other. Big word. They start this communication. They start being able to sort of spread the message. It's not just for a few people, but for all the Jews speaking all sorts of different languages because they have been spread all across the Mediterranean, all through Mesopotamia, and speak different languages. Suddenly, it's the reverse of Babel. They can understand each other. Okay. I'm pretty certain that you have heard of different ways of understanding Pentecost. Okay? I'm not saying that there is only one way of understanding it. I'm not saying that the way I read it as the reverse of the Tower of Babel is the only way of understanding it. I'm not saying that at all. But there needs to be, very often, there needs to be more than one meaning. Now, that's where the riot comes in. Okay? That wasn't planned, so I haven't got a net under my feet. And we read together Isaiah 53. We know it says a lot about Jesus. If we go the chapter before, Isaiah 52, it starts with, "Awake, awake, O Zion, clothe yourself with strength. Put your garment of splendor, O Jerusalem, the holy city." The following chapter, 54, "Sing, O barren woman, you who never bore a child, burst into song, shout for joy, you who were never in labor, because more are the children of the desolate woman than of her who has a husband, says the Lord." It's talking about Jerusalem, barren woman. Jerusalem hasn't had the fruit it needed to have. Understand that the temple, the place of the presence of God, hasn't been there. Double meaning, at least double meaning of that chapter 53. For the Jews, it is talking about Israel as a people. For us, we read it usually as, okay, that's about Jesus. But read it thinking about the people of Israel. From verse 4, chapter 53. "Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows, yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed." I I'll come back to that. The book of Daniel, and the chapter, the part of the chapter that we're going to read tonight, is not in Hebrew. You'll be glad to know. It is written in Aramaic. That matters, what language it is in. Even if you don't know many words of Aramaic or Hebrew, it does matter. Aramaic was the language of the Assyrian Empire. Aramaic, as a language, came to Jerusalem by the might, because of the might of the Assyrians. First, they destroyed the northern kingdom. In 787 BC, they destroyed the northern kingdom, the Assyrians. And the book of Daniel, the book that talks about the sovereignty of God, switches in the second chapter, verse 4, switches from Hebrew, the language of the Bible, to Aramaic, the language of the conquerors, the language of those that have won. That's clever. That's clever. That's powerful. It's meaningful, really meaningful. And hopefully you will see how much that actually means. The Bible in itself, in the way it is multicultural, as if multiculturalism was an invention of the last 20 years. No, the Bible is more than one language. It is more than one culture. It is a library that is very, very diverse. Let's read together Daniel, chapter 5, verse 1 to 4. And I will pause at the end of this reading, and there will be a few questions that you may try to answer or discuss at your tables. Daniel, chapter 5. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblet that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, the gods of bronze, iron, the gods of wood and stone. Okay, what is happening? That's the first question. What is happening? What is striking you, and what is a banquet? We've got 2 minutes. What is happening in these few verses? What is the story? What is a banquet? What is striking, if there's anything striking to you? Eine Minute. Okay. Right. No hands up. Just tell me. Okay. What do you think? What is happening? What is the story? Don't be shy, or I'll have to name people. Especially people that are not looking at me. Okay. Sorry? Yes, they're having a good time, okay. They're having a banquet. What is a banquet? Okay, that's a good French word that you use in English, okay, un banquet, because, you know, it's something which is rejoicing the heart, obviously comes from my own country. There is a banquet, they're having a good time. Isn't that the way of demonstrating your power? You've got thousands of people there, and you've got a big dinner party. You can throw this sort of party up, can't you? It's just, that is, you've arrived, haven't you? Okay, so King Belshazzar, possibly the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, is this sort of guy. Okay, anything else? Okay. So when is this happening? It is happening after the first destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. Okay? That means that what there is of the people of God, what there is left of them, are in exile. They've experienced defeat. What are they thinking about the God of history? That God of history is not simply a God that is going to give you victory at all times. It's not going to happen like that. No. You are experiencing defeat. They have been taken away. The vessels, the most sacred artifacts of the worship of that one true God have been taken as booty. It's nothing else. And if you're throwing a big party, you just want to have some nice utensils and you just use whatever you want. So isn't that arrogance? If you are this sort of ruler, you can do what you want. Isn't Belshazzar a kind of son of God? Because he has triumphed. He is triumphing. He is demonstrating the power of his empire. I am this guy. I can throw a party. Let's drink. Okay. It means that the gods of Babylon are supreme, aren't they? Marduk has won. Marduk is obviously the greatest god. Now, if you think that you've got nothing to do with Babylon and the culture, you may be wrong, because if you have days of the week, with Monday having something to do with the moon, it all comes from Babylon. Okay? Sin is the name of their moon god, and that was the first day of their seven-day week. And you can go all the way through. The 7 days that we have, we owe it to the Babylonians. The naming of the days, okay? Maybe not the 7 days of the week, but the naming of these 7 days. Do you realize that in your English language, it's very pagan? Monday is about the moon. Sunday about the sun. Tuesday is about Mars. Thursday is about Jupiter. Thursday, thunder. That's the god of the Vikings, Thor. That's your Thursday. And your Saturday is about Saturn. Friday is about Venus, but you know, in Friday you've lost it a bit. Okay. It means that Marduk is the king of time. We know the eternal God. Marduk has organized our time. If you are one of the sons of Israel in exile in Babylon, that's a lot to take on. That's a lot to accept and process and understand what is going on. What is going on? Okay. Let's carry on our reading. We're going to read verses 5 to 9. Okay, and three questions. Whose hand? Who sees the hand? And what do the king's advisor do? Okay, I'll repeat the questions after that. From verse 5. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his knees knocked together and his legs gave way. Sorry, I have to pause there. I didn't realize that. His legs gave way. Come on. What sort of translation is that? The Hebrew says that he pooed himself. Okay? He pooed himself of fear. His legs gave way. Oh, come on. Oh, come on. Sorry. Verse 7. The king called out for the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners to be brought and said to these wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Okay, whose hand? Whose hand is that? The hand of God. How do you know that? Okay. There's that. Maybe God is annoyed about the fact that he's using his goldware, all the artifacts of the temple. The hand of God. Okay. It probably is God because of the echoes in other passages in the Bible. The echo is the hand that writes. In Exodus 34, when God carves out the second lot of the Ten Commandments, of the ten words that he gave to Israel at Sinai. The verses are incredibly similar in Hebrew and Aramaic. It's the hand of God that writes on these stones. Okay. Second way of knowing that is that the hand of God appears somewhere else. It shuts, it closes Noah's Ark. The hand of God is the hand that closes Noah's Ark. So hand of God is not, I'm not talking about Diego Maradona there, okay? But hand of God, simply the hand appearing, is something that, you know, it points quite literally as a hand. It points to the fact that it is God's hand because God wrote the Ten Commandments on these two stone tablets. And he shut the ark so that humanity could be saved. Okay. Who sees the hand? Anybody else? People see the writing, but the only one to have seen the hand is the king. Okay. Power and powerlessness. The first four verses are this opulent triumph of a king that can drink, that can throw a huge big party to celebrate his power. The next verse, or the next few verses, things do change. He was comfortable. He's no longer comfortable. And the text of Daniel is quite crude. It's describing the fact that he's pooing himself with fear, anxiety. I thought I was in control. I thought I had all this power. Nothing could go wrong. And right now, in the middle of my palace, things are going wrong, and I am the only one seeing that things are going wrong. Nobody else understands that what I have seen is changing the whole picture. My whole life, the whole kingdom, the whole empire that I'm controlling is turned upside down. And I am, as king, the only one aware of that. What about his advisors? Are they any good? They are as good as government advisors when it comes to a financial crisis. They didn't see it coming. They haven't got a clue. They don't know. That's the situation. We can see something written, but we've got nothing to say about it. The anxiety of the king is not to understand. His anxiety, the fright that he is experiencing, is the fact that there is no one to explain. So from the comfort of a triumphant banquet, where he could use the vessels from God Almighty's temple, well, Belshazzar, King Belshazzar, goes to being terrified. There is terror there. Next two verses, from verse 10. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. O king, live forever, she said. Don't be alarmed, don't look so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, I say, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. This man, Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. That's a queen mother. Okay? That's a queen mother. Probably the queen mother, I don't know, but probably the queen mother, somebody who has enough moral authority to burst into the banquet and interrupt things. Any echoes that this rings from other stories in the Bible? Yes. Yeah. There's the intervention. Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't think of that one. Yes. Yeah. There's the intervention of Mary at Cana, and things are happening because she's there. She's the sort of catalyst that makes things happen. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Any more?
Queen Esther.
Queen Esther and Queen Vashti in the Book of Esther. Queen Vashti refuses to come to the banquet because she doesn't want to be paraded I don't know what word to use, like a concubine, when she should be the most important wife of the king. And then Queen Esther, that sort of bursts into the banquet then, to sort of putting her life on the line, sort of saying, well, I need to interrupt you because my people, the people who worship God, are being persecuted. And she's heard by the then Persian king. Absolutely, yeah. How about the interpretation of dreams? Joseph. And this is very clearly, the echo, and Daniel is another Joseph. In the same way, he's very able in terms of putting the country in order. So he's this sort of God-sent Messiah that is going to govern and manage the kingdom well. Okay, he's the one that has keys to interpretation. Okay, just like Joseph, the first dream that he has, he doesn't understand it, and it's Jacob, his father, that and gives the interpretation for him. And then slowly but surely, Joseph learns how to interpret. And these echoes are in the book of Daniel. Okay. Third in the kingdom. This is the promise that Belshazzar is offering. I will make the person that gives the correct interpretation, gives me the meaning of this, I will make them third in the kingdom. Where's the reference? Where's the echo? Again? Joseph. Yeah, Joseph, who is made second after Pharaoh in Egypt. You'll find that in Genesis, or the first chapter of Exodus. So we've got all these different echoes. The queen mother, comes into the banquet. You need a queen mother sometimes. Somebody that is going to tell you, I know somebody that can tell you. I know somewhere where you can understand that. They may be just a catalyst. But the situation you're in, the anxiety, the terror that you are experiencing, I know somebody that can help. Not necessarily I can help. She's not saying that. She's just in there, in the story, making things happen. Just like women, again, make the whole story of the Exodus happen. The Hebrew midwives, they by not compelling to Pharaoh's orders, they are making the story happen. Moses' mother and sister, by putting him on the little ark, on the little basket, make things happen. And Pharaoh's daughter, again, she makes the story happen. They are queen mothers. They are making the story happen. We're going to skip the bit that maybe a lot of you know, and we're going to go straight to the end of this chapter. Please read through, not just that chapter, but we're going to the conclusion of that chapter. Verse 29 and 30. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed on his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius, the Mede, took over the kingdom at the age of 62. Expediency. Okay, that's one way of dealing with your government. That's the end of the Babylonian Empire. Okay, Babylon was brought down by the Medes and the Persians, and together they just merged into a new kingdom, Persia. Reward, purple, the very expensive dye, gold, third in the kingdom, and death of the king. I don't think at the beginning of the chapter he was thinking about that, but reality is that there is an end. Okay, right, let's come to a conclusion. It's about time, really. The conclusion is going to be a little bit of an allegory. Do you know what? You are this king. I am this king. I am Belshazzar. We are all somewhere along the lines a kind of Belshazzar. We feel comfortable often, especially in a developed country. We're comfortable. We feel comfortable. We feel in power, don't we? We quite like triumph, don't we? We often hear that we should be wanting more power. I don't know about that. Should we be wanting more power? Isn't in so many stories in the Bible about the opposite to power, about renouncing to this power so that you have a much more profound strength, a rock that you can cling to? We often hear that we need victory. Probably, yeah. Maybe not all the time. Jeremiah was the prophet that sort of said, why are you fighting for? There's no point fighting. Just put your weapons down. It's not going to work. He was right. He was right all the way through. The chapter that we read from Isaiah is talking about Jerusalem, the ruins of Jerusalem. What is your hope? Okay, two readings of Isaiah where, okay, is it talking about Jesus? Is it talking about Israel as a people? Both. Isn't Jesus Messiah of Israel? And that means he is the embodiment of the one people of God. And we are the body of Christ. We are this body. The only thing is that we are a little bit individualistic and we don't see our collective dependency. We take our comfort for granted, just like Belshazzar, don't we? The victory we need is over our own comfort. It's doing away with this comfort. And I think times of prayer, like the 24/7, is important. It's great to come to God as a body. It's great to present yourself bare. Strip yourself of all the social positions that you have, the roles that you may have, the comfort you have, all the languages you can speak and read and all that. It's not about that. We know that. It doesn't mean that we experience it. Hearing, reading Bible stories once is never enough. It's not the sort of book that you can read once and that's it. It is something that you need to grow familiar with. I think we've maybe grown a little bit we have a fascination for the beginning, aren't we? And we know that conversion, baptism, is the starting point. It is important to remind ourselves that it is the entry point. We don't want to stay in the porch. We want to move in. There's many houses in there. There is a journey. There is a lifetime journey. And the journey that Pete mentioned this morning is a real journey. It's a lifelong commitment. We dread humiliation. And we avoid it. Oh yes, no point running into it. But sometimes humiliation is the best thing for us. Being a disciple is about discipline. Disciple, discipline, okay. The Greek word, mathetes. Mathematics is about studying, is about sitting down, is about working out what the riddle is. Okay. You know more than you think. How do you say equation in Arabic? How do you say riddle in Arabic? How do you say puzzlement in Arabic? Algebra. Algebra. Equation. You know how to say that in Arabic because that is something that we've got. Being puzzled is important. Waiting to be scared by the writing on the wall is not enough. If we wait to be scared by the hand appearing and the writing, it's too late. There is something that needs to be done beforehand, without, you know, a bad pun on that. Seeing the hand of God is actually scary. Holiness, the holiness of God, must be frightening. Very often we hear that we want to desire being close to God. My experience is that it's quite scary. It's holiness we're talking about. We can't sell PPI and sort of say, yes, that's what you want. No, there needs to be something, and I find it scary. Do you think that you can lightly use the vessel of the temple for your own entertainment? That's what Belshazzar was doing. Do you think that there is a special type of prayer that gives you some control of God's power? I hear it about sort of, there's special ways that you can pray, and then you get the power. And it's a kind of using the vessels for that. No. God is God. And if you think for a second that you can rein God in and have his power, no. I'm sorry, no. It is about finding yourself in front of this God creator, the God that can abandon, the God that has abandoned Jerusalem because its time was over. Faith is not to see. We're all very happy with that verse that we read often in the epistle to Hebrews, the first verse. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And certain of what we do not see. It's not about seeing. Just like the Israelites in exile in Babylon, they were not seeing the God Almighty. Oh no, they were not seeing that at all. Quite the opposite. Even if in the end, Belshazzar was chastised, but their experience was not the experience of a God Almighty. Faith is a mustard seed. Does that mean a little is a lot? Faith is a mustard seed. Does that mean a little is a lot? Or is it that faith is not a quantity? A little faith, is that a lot? Or is that faith is not a quantity? I'm not sure the answer there. But my experience is that the presence of God is scary and holiness is holiness. I read the story of Daniel this way. Daniel didn't have a lot of faith because that would be too comfortable. Daniel went through events that were clearly guided by God. Oh yes, God is there. God is there, certainly, no question. But was that a lot of faith, or was that simply faith? Two verses from the same chapter in Hebrews, verse 22-23, verse chapter 11. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions about his bones. By faith, he gave instructions about his bones. Mill over that one. Not the sort of things that we hear too often, but it's there. By faith, he gave instructions about his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. That's the sort of faith that it's pointing at. Verse 39 and 40. These were all commended, all these heroes of faith, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. The perfection is in the life, living this life with faith. I don't know if it's a lot or a little bit. I know it's faith. They were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. They didn't see it, because faith is not about what you see. Now, the experience of all that may be different. It may be destabilizing, and I think it is. It's as destabilizing, because we can't put ourselves in the shoes of Belshazzar. 1 minute you're banqueting, you're the powerful, you're in charge, you're in control. The next minute, oh no, things go wrong because you've seen the hand and you know what, you sort of know where it's going to go, and you get very annoyed, angry and scared because you need to find somebody with interpretation, with meaning.